Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne. With me, as always, is Thomas Brooks.
Hello, hello.
We have talked a lot about his precursors to really cults, apocalypses. That was heavily, I guess, grounded in Christian mythology background, whatever we want to call it. But we're going to start kind of moving in to more U.S. themed religious systems and talk about one of the most enduring aspects of Protestantism. So today we're going to talk about the Protestant work ethic.
Huzzah!
I guess.
It is
why we do what we do.
Yes.
When people are like, you guys just don't stop. Why don't you take a break? Like, we can't.
We can't do that.
we've been conditioned to have to keep working or we feel guilty.
Yes. Absolutely. That is exactly what the Protestant work ethic is. I guess to start off with, the definition of said Protestant work ethic is this ideological, like, extra theological idea that humans need to participate and work hard in the world, both for themselves personally, but also for the betterment of the world as a whole. So it's kind of like a salt of the earth kind of idea. And so it kind of gets flipped on its head from Catholicism. So the idea that good works in Protestantism aren't going to get you to heaven, in the same way that, like, works are highlighted within Catholicism or other major religious circles. But for Protestants, good works, it should be a way that you show grace to the world around you. And it's kind of the fruit of your spirituality. And so if you work hard, then people will see that hard work, and then they will interpret that it's a part of, like, your spiritual purity or your hallmark of being a Christian. Or it'll be, you know, kind of a almost a proxy for if you get to heaven or not. And there's three main tenets of Protestant work ethics. So the first one is diligence. And okay. So don't quit ever. Hustle.
Always be hustling.
The second one is discipline. And then the third one is frugality.
Okay.
And so they kind of make this trifecta of you need to continuously work, you need to constantly improve that work, and anything that you get out of that work needs to be kept on the down low. So you don't need to be spending extravagantly or wearing the wealth of what you've earned on you. And so this idea of opulence, or I can't think of the word, but the idea of opulence is very much frowned upon, that, like, that becomes then boasting. You're not, like, working out of self-sacrifice. You're like, right, look at me, look how great I'm doing, like, look at all my flashy things that I was able to buy because I'm a hard worker. It's keep it to your chest, and if you have money, make sure you donate it and don't, like, use it for material pleasure.
So, like, on one hand, I wanted to make some much more, like, I guess, snide comments about, like, the toxicity of Protestant work ethic. But at its base level, it does seem, I'm not going to say it's 100% positive, but it does seem to have some good kind of, like work hard. And we could also, I mean, I'm sure the Protestants would be like, no, you don't have to like what you do. You just have to work.
Right. You don't have to liking what you're doing is not a part of this trifecta.
It's a bonus. But we could add something like that. But like work hard, do your job well, be disciplined at it, like, so don't cut corners. And and also, like, you don't have to be a, you know, you don't have to flash your wealth around. Like, like, take care of yourself, take care of your community, take care of the people. Ultimately, you're doing this for both you and others. But the way it's kind of been, like, adopted in kind of a modern era is that that last thing is thrown out the window.
Right. No, I think we should have a conversation about the frugality aspect, because I feel like that's been tossed.
It's
say, like, the 2020s, for example, like, it's hip to be, like, wearing your brands and spending your money and, like,
it's been for decades.
Right. But it's like everybody can participate in that now, is putting on a show for people online.
Right.
I will say that the person who coined the term Protestant work ethic was Max Weber, the Marxist sociologist, in his book The Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism, where he claims that Protestant work ethic is essentially what keeps capitalism running. And so this idea of, like, it's theologically, it sounds good and we like it, but in practice, it's used to keep people with their nose to the grindstone and not complaining and not rising up against the corporate overlords.
And if we talk about, like, getting rid of frugalism or frugality, that would be the very, that would be in any capitalist culture's benefit to get rid of that, because you want people consuming, you want them buying. And then that would likely start a shift away from, because part of that, that at least the way I'm reading it, maybe my hot take on it would be that the frugality would exemplify helping the other and helping your community. Whereas from a modern standpoint, your community doesn't matter. It's you. You need to keep consuming. You need to keep buying. And part of that could be, like, lumped into, like, you buy local.
Right. Or, but, you buy ethical.
Right.
Big square quotes. You buy green. And I think there could be, I think there might is something to that dropping of frugality, right? So this book was written in 1905.
Yeah.
When we weren't a consumer-based economy.
Right.
And now we have to constantly consume because we're not producing.
Right. Right.
In order to keep it going. So it does kind of make sense that frugality would drop. We're also a debt economy too, so like, the more debt you rack up, the better for the economy, essentially. But that's where the original idea of Protestant work ethic arises, is this early 1900s, like, okay, why is, what are the inner workings of, like, the capitalist spirit? And it's this idea that, like, if you're not working, then you're a bad person. You're not disciplined, you're not on top of it, you need to get a job, you lazy bum, and start contributing to society like you're supposed to.
But ultimately, and again, ultimately, it's out of this benefit. So it's this kind of connection to, we know there are a lot of people who are religious, at least this what I'm kind of getting, and correct me if I'm wrong, what I'm getting from the original author's take on this was that we're going to use this kind of religious system or underlying context to get people bought into it, but ultimately we're benefiting the capitalist system. We are benefiting the company that they're working for, because we don't want them to quit. We want them to keep working. We want them to be frugal, so that way they're not going to complain about not making enough money, because they should be tightening their own belts. That's how they survive. They don't have to get a pay raise. And so, like, when we talk today about how minimum wage is still $7.50 an hour, 25 cents an hour, it has not changed since I got my first job.
Right.
And, like, that's ridiculous. I mean, like, we're talking about $15 an hour. $15 an hour was 10 years ago. Like, the current inflation status would be, like, 23, I think.
I think so. And it's, like, only rising.
Right. It's only going to get higher. And so... But if you're following this system, And especially because it is also sort of tied into that, like, those positive kind of pro-social aspects of a normative religious community. They're essentially using a person's underlying religious good nature, treat thy neighbor well, help the people around you. Charitable systems are the best systems. We should be the ones funding, you know, GoFundMe,
right,
people's healthcare issues, and that's what we should be saving our money for, because they can't afford it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's kind of gross.
It is kind of gross. And if you read, like, we did in Personality, we read some Marx on, like, technology of the... No, that was Foucault. What was Marx? Alienation. And so Marx outlined the idea that, like, it's a part of, like, the human spirit for us to want to work hard,
yeah,
and to become disciplined in things that we're good at and to create. Like, that's what makes us human, according to Marx. And that if you throw us into a capitalist system, then that gets taken away from us because now we can't indulge in creation. We are forced to create in order to survive.
Yeah, and we're creating for someone else. We're not creating for ourselves.
Yep.
Yeah, we're like not.
Yeah. This podcast right now, we're creating it for anchor.com.
Yeah, but I mean, ultimately, I could post it somewhere else.
We could.
I could just self-publish it. I mean, if I put it on YouTube, like, YouTube's going to monetize it. If I put it on Spotify, Spotify is going to monetize it. But I'm not monetizing. Like, this is basically a hobby for me at this point.
Right.
But I am doing it for other people. It'd be very different than if I'm, like, painting a miniature, doing art, or other stuff that I have personal creative interest in, woodworking. I could do that on my own, but that's even harder now. Wood price of wood's through the roof. I haven't built anything out of wood in years, because it's harder to do it because the system is, they need the wood to build houses that no one can afford.
Right. Yes, exactly. There's been a little bit of research into the Protestant work ethic and psychology. I did a quick lit review.
Cool.
Most of it hangs out in, like, the 1980s and 90s.
So not a whole lot in terms of a modern view.
Mm-hmm. Like, there is some stuff, but it's like, I would have to sit with this literature for a little bit longer,
yeah,
before we could do this, because it's like computational models of worldview shifting, and I'm like,
I mean, you think that's maybe because we're starting to see shifts away, or like a rebelling against the Protestant work ethic, where that we weren't necessarily seeing in the 80s and 90s, where it was, I'd argue, just accepted. Mm-hmm. It was status quo.
I mean, it pretty much was status quo. Do you want to take a guess at some of the correlates and predictors of this Protestant work ethic that they found during the 80s and 90s?
I don't know. Number of hours worked. Or do I need to go, like, more psychological?
Well, actually, it's not really that psychological. So it's young age. It's less education.
Okay.
Part-time employment.
Real
low income.
Huh?
And single marital status. And this is from Tang and Zen, 92. And then, let's see, Furham, 87, found that the predictors with the stepwise multiple regression, high internal locus of control, limited education, strong postponement of gratification beliefs.
Okay.
And then both of them have in common free market enterprise endorsement.
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, I could see things like education and age playing a role, because you don't necessarily know better. Your first job, you're all in. Like, you kind of see the stereotype of how a job is supposed to be.
Right.
And so you get into that. But over time, you maybe start to learn, wait a second. My first job was at a grocery store, and I remember an eye-opening experience for me when I had to confront my boss about a raise.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I am doing nothing. I'm doing everything for nothing.
Yep.
Like I'm running the front end of this store and I am making like 50 cents more than when I started. And when I started, minimum wage was $5.25 an hour.
Oh, okay.
And so I started seeing bumps when like minimum wage went up. That happened not too long after, but yeah, I mean, I was making like $5 an hour. But also, like, I was in high school at the time, and so like I didn't really know any better. But the more I worked, the more I had different managers, and then I became a manager. Like, it gave me a lot more like experience, mm-hmm. and understanding of like what I'm doing based on pay. I had to restructure the way I thought when I went from being a manager to going back to being a sales floor associate at a new job. And like, I was like, I can't do everything. I don't have to do everything. I'm not a manager anymore. I'm not getting paid for that. And that took time to kind of restructure that way of thinking. But age has definitely changed my endorsement of the Protestant work ethic.
I mean, in some ways, yes. Like, I was lucky enough to have parents who sat me down before my first job at a fast food restaurant, and they were like, don't be good at things you don't want to do. And I was like,
yeah,
okay. And I was like, sounds good. And so I implemented that. But I feel like my Protestant work ethic has only gotten like more intense with age now that I'm in academia.
Yeah. And I think, and I'm trying to like rationalize it in my head. I'm trying to think of like why. And I think maybe it's because we're not thinking of ourselves in retail jobs anymore.
Right.
And so I don't really think about the idea of the Protestant work ethic and that kind of like retail mentality. I try to avoid falling prey to that retail mentality. But when I think about it, like if I'm crunching a paper late at night instead of getting good night's sleep, that's Protestant work ethic.
Yep.
If I don't have time to enjoy my hobbies, if I'm not setting boundaries on like emails and and work, that's Protestant work. That's it. I think I still even fall prey to like that frugality. But I think that's because like I've spent a lot of time eking by paycheck to paycheck. And so I'm not saying I don't buy frivolous stuff. I got way too many Legos. But I really weigh the pros and the cons of like buying a Lego set. Like I really sit down and I'm like, wait, no, I can do this. I'm an adult. I have the disposable income to do it. I'm not really concerned about frugality. Like I can still help people who need help if I wanted to do that. But there's still that like that voice in the back of my head that's like, are you gonna be able to afford food next week? And I'm like, yes. But I have to think about it. Where I would much more like rigorously have to think about that 10 years ago.
Right.
20 years ago when I was just starting, you know, a little longer than 20 years ago when I was just starting to work. But yeah, I could definitely see like the influence and where a lot of these things play into how we engage in our work, and how I would argue like this is one of these grand things that we talk about, like psycho religion, like we're talking about it because it's the Protestant work ethic. This thing transcends religion.
Right. Cause you're not even Protestant.
Right. Yeah. And I see like toxic work behaviors in every group. It doesn't matter if you're Catholic or Protestant or Baptist or Muslim or atheist, or you believe in the flying spaghetti monster. Like Protestant work ethic, like the concepts of this permeate. the way we engage with work. And maybe in our tie-ins to cults, we can argue that like the job itself is becoming a religion.
Oh, absolutely. I think our first conversation about cults like 2 years ago, three years ago, we did talk about like
Starbucks is a cult.
Starbucks is a cult. I think they do a little bit more culty thing. They like they add a little bit more like spice in there than say like just your standard job. But absolutely. I also see it in the way that like I set expectations for students too, and like kind of those like internal biases that I have when I'm reading like how serious the student is about taking a class and getting their work done, right? Like I have to keep myself from like jumping to moral failings, like justifications.
Right.
It's not like they didn't do their work, they're lazy, they're, you know, etc. And it becomes like this personal thing. I'm like, no, calm down. It's 2022.
But there's also the flip side of that. There's that view as a professor, and that's something that I struggle with because I try to give students a pretty big benefit of the doubt, but I struggle with having to give up my time to handle like the students who don't do their work on time or aren't turning stuff in. And one, I want to avoid like stuff comes up. I don't want to say that this person is lazy. I don't want to say that there's some moral failing there, but also there needs to be an understanding because they could view the same thing for me. This is like kind of the two-way street. Like they have to understand, like I have a life outside of school too. I want my weekends off.
Right.
I want to take a week off over the summer. I don't have to work this summer, but yet I am still helping students with advising. And like, on one hand, like I shouldn't, but on the other hand, like it's that, and I don't know whether it's discipline, diligence, or frugality, but like it's that aspect of like giving back.
Yeah.
It's like being that helpful individual. I find myself like with that side of it, like that mentality of like reciprocity and golden rule and like that concept, which is heavily steeped in like philosophical systems. But yeah, I don't want to get into the realm of like viewing my job like I would a cult. Like I don't want to be a part of the cult.
Right. Well, I mean, the idea would be that if we're too invested in the triad, we are getting sucked in, right?
Yeah.
So I think the diligence one hits me the hardest, right? So like if I'm not diligently working every single day, like I used to have the worst time in undergrad and grad school over the summer when I wouldn't take classes and my life would just be this like limbo for 4 months straight during the season that I hate the most anyway because it's hot and I can't do anything. Worst times of my life were in the summer without any sort of like higher
structure,
purpose, no structure, no purpose, nothing to work on. You know, you're supposed to fill it with hobbies and passions and stuff like that, but then you don't because like you should be working, but then there's nothing to work on and then you're stuck.
Well, I think we also see the same thing when we talk about the transition from like high school to college, and that's been a big discussion right now of one of the biggest issues that students have coming to college. And like, there's an argument like, maybe college isn't for everyone, but kind of is now that like we're kind of pushing it. Like it's, again, that's part of the like the work ethic. You have to go to college. You have to do this. You have to do this, or it could be seen as a moral failing. That there's so much structure at the high school level, or there's supposed to be. I mean, there's some other issues going on. I'd love to get like a teacher, high school teacher to talk, because there's stuff like the system that the way like it's all tied to the same like systemic social things. But we have this issue with structure with like students who come in and we're like, all right, we want you to like come up with your own concepts and ideas, and they're like,
can't do that.
Yeah, it's tough. And you have to break through that kind of barrier. Otherwise, it can be very stressful.
Well, there's also the expectation to read and do work not in the classroom, too.
Right.
That's also foreign. Like, I was talking with Jordan two nights ago, I think. And I don't remember how it came up, but I was like, yeah, no, I had to read, like, the whole textbook in high school because I was homeschooled. So I had to read the whole thing. And then what shocked me in college was that, like, the professor would pull, like, 2/3 of the chapters of the textbook.
Yeah.
And Jordan was like, I didn't read any of the textbook in high school. We just covered it in class.
Yeah.
And so, like, this expectation of, like, because the idea of a college class is it's 3 credits. One of those credits, you're in the classroom. The other two, you're supposed to be doing it on your own.
So I guess this is the question I want to pose, since I'm giving you the lead and I can just ramble about retail work all day. What's the religion in the Protestant work ethic? Is this a religion is used to push the narrative? Or the spicier take, is it becoming kind of a belief system in which, like a religion, irregardless of your religious background, is kind of shaping a kind of religion of work? Like we talk about work as a cult,
mm-hmm.
or your job as a religious institution. There are a set of norms and beliefs. There's a figurehead at the top. Your CEO is the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
Different popes can shape interpretation of the rules. There are different levels of how those structures are built depending on the job. So really your boss can play a huge role in how something like a true kind of Protestant work ethic forms. And so are we talking about something that kind of has its roots in religion, or is it just that like religion is used to push this kind of new variation of belief?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I think the first thing that comes to mind is our cult conversation where we pose the question like, are MLMs the cults of neoliberalism if the supreme being is the invisible hand of the market, right?
Mm.
And so if we take like, I don't know, a Christian cult versus just kind of like a culty Christian denomination,
right,
versus like a denomination that has cult aspects to it but isn't a cult, we could probably make a very similar parallel. So like the MLM is the cult, Starbucks is the culty company, but like, I don't know, Walmart has cult elements but isn't really a cult.
It's probably too big.
Right, like, yeah. The Southern Baptist Convention is not a cult. It's too big.
But individual stores
could be.
Depending on management, policy. Well, it makes me think of, like, you know, if we talk about the nature of, like, religion, like if we try to, like, bridge the gap between, let's say, the workplace and the church.
Mm-hmm.
There are rules and norms you're supposed to abide by. Some of them are unspoken. Some of them are downright illegal for them to ask you to do. People will abuse those rules and systems. You could look at like talking about pay. So if we're talking about frugality, probably shouldn't be talking about pay, but man, is that important.
Mm-hmm.
For most jobs, like in academia, maybe that's why we kind of detach ourselves from it a little bit, is like, I work for a public institution. You can go see how much money I make. It's public record. You can see everyone's salary at the university. Mm-hmm. Or at least every faculty member's salary at the university. But if you violate some of those norms, so if you're in a job because they don't want you talking about pay because you will, you might ask for more money,
mm-hmm.
and then that's going to cost their bottom line. If you want to actually delve into the numbers, you're actually like going against the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're violating those norms and you can be excommunicated. You can be fired for that. We're seeing that right now with how Starbucks stores Amazon stores. Tesla just fired a bunch of the people who wrote the letter saying that they disagreed with Elon Musk's behavior. So they wrote a letter of concern. They just fired those people.
Mm-hmm.
They violated the norm. They spoke against their leader.
Mm-hmm.
There were reports of new Starbucks stores where they removed their foam standing mats after they unionized. Mm. Amazon was firing people and trying to rig. And this is straight from like the big like unions that are the workers unions that are helping oversee these votes. You know, they were engaging in the tactics that we haven't seen in like 100 years, because like unions waxed and then they waned and now they're coming back into flavor. And we're starting to see the same, you know, I mean, we haven't gotten to the point where like they're bombing buildings and I'm talking about like the companies are bombing buildings and shooting people in the street for unionization. But like there is something very cultish about like, you got to stay in your lane or we're coming after you. You are heretics.
Mm-hmm.
We will fire you. We will make sure you do not work. But something like the Protestant work ethic definitely helps to hold that belief system in check.
Yeah, because the idea, like going back to the individual interaction between employees, like the idea of not talking about your pay is rooted in either A, you don't want to make enemies because you're getting paid more from them, or B, you don't want to be seen as lesser because you're getting paid less than them. And so if you don't talk about it, then everybody's on like this illusionary like pedestal together. But the overarching ideology is definitely this idea of like, you're working, but not for the money. Like, obviously you're working for the money, but we can't talk about that because that's improper. And so don't talk about how much money you're making, because you break the norms and you get ostracized. Really, the threat is that everybody realizes they're all getting paid shit, and then they unionize and collectively ask for raises.
Right. But there's also like a level of like, because it makes me think of like cognitive dissonance. You're questioning the organization. You're questioning. Mm-hmm. I mean, much as in someone who would like go through the Bible and say, oh, I found this contradiction here. And like, do you rationalize and accept it? Do you maybe just tell yourself, hey, like this book was written, or like this text was written so long ago and has been translated so many times, like the gist of it is there, I can understand it and go with it. Or like, does it really bother me?
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with something like pay, or if we're talking about like policy, like questioning that policy is almost viewed it as the same way.
Mm-hmm. And we also have to consider too, that like there's been such a waning of employee loyalty as well. So like, if we think like that boomer version of Protestant work ethic, it's like, you're going to be at this company for like the next 60 years and you're going to retire from them. Right. And so you need to have this like working relationship between you and your employer. And so things like talking to your coworkers about pay would probably be taboo because you're kind of trapped in that situation with them for the next couple decades. But now in precariat, like gig economy stuff, like Uber drivers don't know who their boss is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you could be at a job for a little while and then you could bounce and go to the next thing. Like there's constant movement and flow between the kinds of work people do and the amounts of work people do. One of the things that was hard about being in the Dallas area is that because it's so expensive and fast paced, we didn't get to have many like friend hangouts because everybody had 4, 5, 6, 7 gigs that they were running at the same time. And unless like we were on a project with them or our work intersected in a way, we didn't get to see each other because nobody had free time to do that.
Yeah.
And so that's a different environment than like, you know, your Homer Simpson working at the nuclear facility and keeping his suburban job in his small town.
Right, right. And then kind of nothing ever changing because he's got the job. He's just going to do this forever. What else can he do? Like, and that's another part of it too. Like, but yeah, it's,
so I guess that also kind of goes back to the idea of like the company town, right? The Homer Simpson stuck in this town because of the nuclear facility. Arguably academics are stuck in their towns. Especially on tenure tracks. Because A, they're going to be there decades. B, they're in a living situation that's dominated by the work around the university. And so you develop like these working norms within the institution itself of like not talking about your pay and like being loyal to the institution and
or putting in the extra work, because just like that person who doesn't think that they're going to move on to the next job, you want to make your work better because this is your life.
This is it.
You know, it's not like after like I moved from the second grocery store I worked at to going to work at Blog, you know, like it was on my third retail job. And this wasn't like years, this was like 4 or 5 years in between each, but it was on like my third retail job. And it was sort of that realization, like, I'm not going to be here forever. Like, I like it like here. I really enjoyed working for Blockbuster, but also like, I'm not going to be here forever. Like, and then the same when I went and worked for Lowe's Hardware, it was much in that same mentality. I was like, I'm going back to school. I'm going to get my master's degree. I'm going to go get my PhD. I am not going to be here forever. But once I started in academia, maybe that was like a switch flipped, because like I started getting a little better. Like I'd go in to work at Lowe's, I'd work my shift, I'd leave. Like I was not doing anything more than I had to do. Mm-hmm. But then like getting into academia, it was that sort of like part of it was about proving myself and like moving up the ladder, getting that tenure track position. And now I'm kind of going back to that, like, wait, I need to set boundaries. Like I am not working an 80 hour a week job. Like, and I think having a union helps with,
right. No, I think that's a big shift in what's our relationship, because like the company town idea that I just outlined, really suppresses the worker in the case that they don't have a union shared power. Right.
Yeah.
So you just have to fold and do whatever. But if you do have a union, then you actually get some shared governance and some agency within that space.
Yeah. Yeah. And it works off of a lot of the same systems. Like if we're talking about this as a season of religion, like it is an organization, it is a community, it is a group, it is everything. And so they were kind of talking about it in the same context. You have this highly identifiable group, and especially something like those company towns, like that's, when we talk about like maybe the dark side of economic systems, company towns are probably at like the top, or at least pretty close to the top of like dark economic systems, like maybe right under like slavery. Because in a lot of cases they were pretty close.
Yeah,
like you got paid in company dollars. Like you didn't even get paid in US dollars. You got paid in dollars to go buy food at the company store. So all the money stayed within the company. And it was really just ways to make the company money. Like the company became life. It became everything. It became your identity. It became your culture. You had nothing outside of that. And from a psychological standpoint, it's very unhealthy to be so tied to any one thing. And I guess that's maybe a worry we've got. Like if we're talking about being like, so bound to academia, but in a world of like academic Twitter, where there are people who leave the system and there are people who will critique the system, but they're also going into,
right? No, I think system. The quitlet weakens the stronghold of the academic system, but on the other hand, like I don't think any academic within the system or outside of it is going to have any sort of influence on making things not as Protestant work ethic-y, because it's going to happen where the faucet gets shut off for the cash flow, right? Like, yeah. And none of us are going to be let anywhere near that faucet.
So I guess in sort of the same way, like if we wanted to change the system, it's not us, much in the same way if we're talking about like a broader religious system, it's got to happen at like the Pope level.
Pope level or the congregant level? Because we're not technically congregants, we're probably like deacons.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. The students.
The students
have to march.
Or broadly, the community. Taxpayers who fund the system itself, right? And so we move into the politics of Protestant work ethic at that point, which is rife with this theme. Like, every single politician's going to get up there and be like, I came from rags, and right. I worked hard and long, and we saved our money, and look at us now. And they sell this, like, idealized individual, like, rags to riches story. And that's been...
It makes me think of grown home Texan, picked himself up by his bootstraps, anti ivory tower, Ted Cruz, totally a human, who went to an Ivy League school, is the son of an immigrant, dual citizenship, changed his name. Like, he is the opposite of what I mean. And I'm not saying any of that is bad at its face. I think it's fine that he went to a prestigious university. I think it's a little scummy that he gets up there and he's like, these academic elites, you are the academic elite. What are you talking about? You have more power than we do.
So I have this quote from this guy, Frank Chodorov, who is allegedly the last member of the old right. He died in 1966. He's a big anti-interventionist figure in American politics. But he said, quote, there was a time in these United States where a candidate for public office could qualify with the electorate only by fixing his birthplace in or near the log cabin. He may have acquired money or even a fortune since then, but it was the tradition that he must have been born of poor parents and made his way up the ladder by sheer ability, self-reliance, and perseverance in the face of hardship. In short, he had to be self-made. The so-called Protestant ethic then prevalent held that man was the sturdy and responsible individual, responsible to himself, his society, and his God. Anybody who could not measure up to that standard could not qualify for public office or even popular respect. One who was born with, quote, a silver spoon in their mouth might be envied, but could not aspire to public acclaim. He had to live out his life in the seclusion of his own class.
Not anymore. And also not then.
Because you just have to have the perception. You just have to fix your birthplace in a log cabin and then you're good.
But like that whole thing, like, I mean, to completely go off the rails, like, this is no longer a religious podcast, this episode. This is a social podcast. That like the idea of like the self-made man, the self-made millionaire, that's very Protestant work ethic as well. And it's a complete sham.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, I'm sure someone will find an example of a self-made millionaire or billionaire. Well, there's
plenty of examples, and like they're just getting more, how we say, diverse as of late. But yeah, no, like this fantasy of like the immigrant, totally human Ted Cruz. Because it's like building the in group, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You need the unwashed masses who aren't going to measure up to that, but who aspire to it through Protestant work ethic to identify with you, somebody that has nothing in common with them. And so you craft your fictional story.
So maybe one of the things that I'm thinking of with this is that much like our discussion on cults or positions of the end of the world, raptures, positions of status. So getting the label of, let's say, shaman or leader, whatever it may be. This idea of kind of the Protestant work ethic kind of works within that to kind of help build group connection and identity. If I'm working hard, I can relate to other hardworking people. Or if I want to sell myself to those hardworking people, I can just give the perception that I'm working hard. I could show success. So I'm hoarding a bunch of money. That shows that I'm a successful person. It doesn't matter how I got it. Mm-hmm. I just have to kind of create that belief because it's stewed into that Protestant work ethic. And if we're all doing it, we're all following that same belief system. We're all following the cult. Then everyone who kind of meets that criteria must also be in my group.
Right.
And the people who aren't, the people who have to go and ask for handouts, the people who have to beg and scrape by, the people who cannot afford.
The people who can't keep a stable job.
That's not a cultural failing. That's not a social failing. It's a moral failing on their part. It's individualistic.
Yep. So individual victors, individual losers, and we all just continuously beat our heads against the wall trying to prove how spiritual we are.
Yeah, because it all comes down to like morality. And to bring it back to religion, when we ask people from kind of a psychological sense, we tie morality to religion so strongly, and that if you are not religious, you are not moral. And so therefore any moral failing is also a failing on like that higher level.
I would probably argue that the Protestant work ethic and that value of hard work to morality is probably stronger now than it ever has been, because you obviously see super fake appeals to Christianity from major politicians now. That like, that was the thing that like killed me during the Trump years, was like, he's not a Christian, why do the evangelicals love him, he's clearly faking it. And I'm like, because he gives the impression that he works hard.
Yeah. And so it's a moral imperative. It doesn't matter if he's Christian or not, he is perceived as Christian because he is successful, or he is perceived as successful.
So, and since I think we argued at the beginning of this episode that the frugality has kind of gone out the window, it's important for like the gold plated toilet is an important item to have.
Yeah, it made me think with frugality gone too. The idea is it kind of does take away though that even in these situations, like it's becoming even more individualistic. Whereas we can maybe argue that the origins of the Protestant work ethic was still very collective, was still very much benefit the community, benefit the group, benefit the world. Like we are all in this together. But as it's become more individualistic, as we've seen kind of this greater fracturing, when that person does need help, if they're a part of the group, they're probably going to get it. Or if there are, I mean, or we have these cases with already successful people running like crowdfunding campaigns.
Right.
To get more money.
Yeah, I think some of the remnants of this would be like that crowdsourcing. Like,
yeah,
look at this heartwarming story of this 5-year-old who's sold biscuits to like, you know, get his heart surgery so he doesn't die in the next 2 years.
Right. Like that's right.
Heartwarming.
Yeah. Well, because we're hung up on the kind of moral system, like the system or the people have to work.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to admit that the system or the culture itself has immoral qualities. Qualities being having to force a 5-year-old to sell lemonade on the street to afford heart surgery. That is a moral. That is a moral failing, and that's my opinion. We can't empirically test it, but I'm going to make a strong argument that is a moral failing. But we don't want to think about it. That's going to cause dissonance. It's going to cause those negative perceptions that, like, wait a second, maybe all this hard work that I've done, and that even goes back to like we talked about motivation last podcast, the justification of effort. really helps to prop up dissonance. It doesn't matter what we're being motivated by. But this is trying to kind of shift to very intrinsic. I work because it truly is motivating for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Or I work for the society, so it's extrinsic. But regardless of that, the more and more we work, the more and more we kind of feed into the system, psychologically speaking, the harder it is for us to break away from it.
Mm-hmm.
To admit that maybe I've been wasting my time for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it hasn't been worth it. Maybe I should have been fighting for other things. Maybe I should have been fighting.
Yeah.
And it's tough to get away, to get out of that system. And so we need the heartwarming story of the five-year-old selling lemonade or biscuits, because it confirms the Protestant work ethic. Because that little kid hustled.
He hustled, so he earned the right to live.
Yes. He earned his heart surgery.
The privilege.
The privilege to live, yeah. Yeah.
The privilege to live.
Because it's not a right. It's
a privilege that you have to earn.
Yeah. Ugh. And it's scary. But
just a little bit.
I guess this will take us forward when we talk about things like spiritual capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
We start getting into some of these other topics or these figures, because I mean, maybe the idea and how we kind of tie this was one of those topics we wanted to talk about. On one hand, it has its origins in religion systems, but its modern sense has been kind of warped. It may have had some good points, but in a modern sense, it's been kind of warped and distorted, which is kind of a theme this season of like, hey, we got this original religious system, or this origin that's being kind of twisted and turned in different ways.
No, it's showing different, because like, I don't even know if warped would be a good word, because like, obviously these things weren't good in the past either, right? But they were particular to that context. And so the idea of like the MLM cult now, you know, like, what is the difference between that and like, in terms of how terrible it is versus like how terrible like the Kellogg Battle Creek Sanatorium was then?
Right.
It just looks different. Like the aesthetics have changed, some of the functionality has changed, but like the spirit's still there. So
not warped, but it's like it's still hanging on.
It's hanging on. It's terrible.
Yeah.
So, with that, I have our ism of the week.
Huzzah!
Huzzah indeed. Our ism of the week is Hellenism.
Hellenism.
Hellenism. So this is different than like the philosophical historical Hellenism. This is modern religion resurgence, both in Greece,
okay,
as well as outside of Greece. And the Hellenism centers itself around the worship of the Hellenistic deities, namely the 12 Olympians.
Okay.
Let's see. The 12 Olympians. Zeus, Hera, Poseidon, Demeter, Athena, Apollo, Artemis, Ares, Hephaestus, Aphrodite, Hermes, and either Hestia or Dionysus. And their tenets involve, let's see, they have several tenets here. Well, three major ones. It's Eusebia, which is piety or reverence towards the gods. It can also be translated as right action and is often used similarly to Dharma in Hinduism.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's arete, which is translated to excellence or moral virtue, so living up to one's potential. And then xenia is the concept of hospitality and is sometimes translated to guest friendship or ritualized friendship. And so we're looking at piety, excellence, and generosity triad here.
Be moral, work hard, and to the best of your ability.
And take care of others.
Take care of others.
Yep.
Interesting.
Interesting indeed. So I saw that little parallel and I was like, ooh. So I guess you don't have to be a Protestant.
No, you can be, you can serve the Greek gods and still have to basically engage in the same work ethic. But
So I will say that there is a distinction. So the Hellenists acknowledge all 12 gods. It's pantheistic. But there are like neo-pagan movements that like center themselves around particular Greek deities. And they are not considered Hellenistic because it's not the 12.
Right. So if and you just serve Hephaestus.
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
And so, and historically there is no connection to historical, like this isn't the same group of like Greeks.
It's a very modern.
It's like a reimagining neo version of this. And so the majority of modern historians agree that the religion practiced by the ancient Greeks has been extinguished by the 9th century CE and at the latest, and that there is little to no evidence that it survived in public form, at least past the Middle Ages. And so,
I mean, on the other hand, like, again, like these concepts of like a want to work hard, like when I'm thinking about this from like an evolutionary sense, it's like, it makes sense. Like if we're all working towards the same goal, we're going to benefit our tribe. We're going to benefit our town, et cetera, et cetera. It's just that in a more modern sense, there's a difference between like, I put in my work and then I get to do my own thing. Because even when we look at this historically, people had time off.
Mm-hmm.
People weren't working 15, 20 hours a day, weren't holding multiple jobs. But we're seeing that, and it's sort of a flipping, and maybe that's where I kind of go with the, like, it was warped, like this idea of like taking pride in what you do is fine. You should enjoy what you do.
You should work hard and create,
right?
That's a part of being a human.
That's one of Erikson's stages of psychosocial development, is feeling good about what you produce. Mm-hmm. And what you've done with your life. But this is kind of taking it without question. Like this is what like Protestant work ethic would be doing, it without questioning, am I actually producing well?
Mm-hmm.
Until you get to the point where it's too late and you look back and go, man, I just wasted everything in this company. Like I could have left. It could have been better.
And it's like an expectation of work. Like it's the Marxist or the Maslow idea of hard work is like, this should be a byproduct of living a good life. So living the good life should come first.
Right.
And then you should be able to express this inherent quality of being a human.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other way around with the Protestant work ethic is you should be working and deny your humanism through the process.
Yeah, Maslow would say like we need security and food and basic comfort first before like production is really effective, and like that's healthy. Like you need these basic things. We flipped it on its head, and we have production is how you get those basic levels of Maslow's hierarchy, and then maybe you can get high enough on the hierarchy to then produce like hobby stuff,
mm-hmm.
Or art or something like that. But like you have to like, there's this new lower tier.
Right. You should be working first and foremost.
You need a job.
And then we can talk about getting you housing.
Right. Right. And from Maslow's perspective, it would be the other way around. Like, no. We give everyone housing. We make sure everyone's taken care of, healthcare, food, and they'll work. They'll be super productive.
Mm-hmm.
Give
them good relationships,
right? Yeah,
let them follow their passions.
Yes. And so it's been kind of rearranged, and that psychology and other fields keep time and time again saying like, guys, come on, like this is how we could be better. And they're like, but profit margins, but the shareholders.
What would the shareholders think?
I don't know.
Well, it's not even like at the profit margins, right? Because that argument doesn't even fly. Like,
no,
you could say it's, if you do this, your profits will get higher.
Yep.
Because
and we find that
but the profit margin, like, scope that they have is like month by month.
Yeah.
It's not 5 years down the road for this company.
It's all short term.
It's all short term. So
we're talking about, have to talk about leadership at some point.
Doesn't
we
exist.
Haven't already. Yeah, I know. But we could talk about like those viewpoints and how those viewpoints shape company progress.
Mm-hmm.
How the social system of the company itself changes. But we have to get out of this. So we'll be back to more religious stuff.
Yes.
As we continue. But yeah.
We had to beat a dead horse for a minute for this episode.
Yeah, we had to go back to our roots. Like, we haven't brought up communism in a while.
I know.
We haven't brought up capitalism in a while.
Yeah, we need to do a whole like deep dive.
But we will be back in a couple of episodes to talk about spiritual capitalism and tarot cards and
where I drag myself and the Catholic Church down with me.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Fun?
Fun.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'll have fun.
I will probably also have fun.
I don't know about the listeners, but I will.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters.
So on that note, we'll say goodbye.
Goodbye.